How many of you get watch the nightly news or get a daily newspaper? Do you? See your hands. Most or some of you do. Yeah, I do both of those, and sometimes, and my wife will certainly attest to this. Sometimes it makes me very angry. It really does, and I probably should, probably too much. So, I think it's probably one of the reasons why I have a little bit of trouble with my right eye. But nevertheless, we need to watch the news. We need to stay informed. You can turn to Matthew 24 if you want to. Christ told us to watch. Matthew 24, verse 42. I think it is 24, verse 42. Yeah. And he said, as he was explaining to the disciples about signs before his return, he said, "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into." So Christ is going to come kind of an unexpected time for most people. "Therefore, you be ready." So he wants us to be ready for it. "For the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." Well, I wanted to talk today about the news and kind of give us an idea of where we are in prophecy overall, not anything real specific, but kind of show in from the Bible things are being fulfilled. And so the title of my sermon is Coping with the Daily News. Coping with the Daily News. And I want to talk about what we can do to cope with that later on. I'll start with the Middle East. Middle East has been an area of concern for some time, I guess, an area of kind of turmoil for a number of years. The Arabs fought among themselves and have fought other nations. They really don't like the Jews, have a strong dislike for them. Going back to the days of Nasser in Egypt, when he was president of Egypt, and Israel had not been formed too long as a nation, he wanted to drive them into the sea. I think those were his words. Excuse me. And it's kind of the feeling that has prevailed till this day in the Arab countries surrounding Israel. Of course, that goes back a long time, and I'll talk about that in a while, about the animosity between Ishmael and Isaac. But that still is in existence. It's even stirred up more, and in all of the, I guess, zealous Muslim groups, you could might say, or radical Muslim groups, there's still a strong desire to destroy Israel. That is certainly true of Hamas, the government, I guess if you could call it that, that is loosely governing the Palestinians and next door to Israel. The Hamas is the Islamic group that was responsible for first launching the rockets into Israel. And they would station a lot of those close to schools or in areas where it was difficult for Israel to strike back without looking bad. But they did strike back anyway, and the world kind of condemned them for that. This is what it says in part of the charter of Hamas. In Article 7 of the Charter, it says, "The day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight the Jews, killing the Jews, when the Jew will hide behind stones and trees." So that is their thinking. It always helps to know what somebody else thinks, you know, and they're very forthright about that. Most of the Islamic people are very outspoken about how they feel about the Jews, and base it upon their understanding of the Quran, which is their holy book, and they believe in it just as strongly as we believe in the Bible. And according to the Prophet Muhammad, there will come a time when the Islamic people will rule the world. And so they look forward to that, planning for that. And they consider other people who might get in their way for that to be infidels. They even consider some of the more moderate Muslims to be in line with the infidels, I guess you might say, or in concert with them. Then there's a group called ISIS, or ISIL, depending upon how you want to look at it. ISIS stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. President Obama calls it ISIL, which is the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. And if you're not sure what the Levant means, it's a territory that includes Israel. So there's a major distinction in that, depending upon what you call it. The people who are in that group, ISIS or ISIL, certainly do want to control the territory that Israel occupies right now. That's one of their goals. And recently, Islamic radicals killed 140 people in Pakistan. We saw that on the news. If you watch the news, it was mostly children. And so that kind of gives you an idea of the kind of people that they are. Of course, they don't mind beheading journalists and showing that on, I guess, YouTube or some of the social media to get the most impact out of it. They certainly don't mind raping young children and women. And a group called Boko Haram in Africa kidnapped a number of young girls, I think, sold them into slavery of some sort. So they're not nice guys, you might say. And they hate Israel and the United States because we're in league with Israel. We support them. They do not, to this day, recognize Israel as a country, which is kind of interesting. So let's see where some of that is coming from. Turn to the Genesis, if you will. It's prophesied a long time ago. In Abraham's days, Genesis 16, verse 12. Sarah and Abraham had trouble conceiving a baby, and so Abraham took Sarah's handmaid, Hagar, and had a baby through her. His name was Ishmael. In verse 10 of Genesis 10, it says, "Angel of the Lord," he's talking to Hagar now, "said, return to your mistress." She'd left over fighting over this. "And submit yourself under her hand," that is Sarah's hand. "And the angel of the Lord said to her, I'll multiply your descendants exceedingly so that they shall not be counted for multitude. The angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you're with child, you shall bear a son, call his name Ishmael," which is mean God hears. That's what that means. "He shall be a wild man, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." And so that pretty well describes the Arabian people to this day. They are not only are they against the nation of Israel in the Middle East, they're certainly against the United States and Great Britain. And they don't like the Catholic Church at all. A great deal of animosity between the Muslims and the Catholic Church. And they even fight against themselves among some of the Arab nations. So this prophecy is being fulfilled today. Now if you'll turn to Daniel, the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 11. We'll read what Daniel prophesied for the last days for this, a king coming up ruling over the Arab nations. there's no one right now that rules over the Arab nations, but for the Islamic people, they are looking for a 12th imam or caliph or a ruler who would bring the Arab nations together. And they believe that he will appear before the end, before the Islamic people were made rulers over the world. So they're looking for that. Daniel 11, verse 40 says, at the time of the end, so we're not quite there yet, because this king of the south and king of the north have not been identified yet, but at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, talking about the king of the north. My old King James says push against. I think that's probably a little bit more accurate. I don't know if the king of the south will actually attack Europe with weapons. They may use other things. King of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, a great military force. Many chariots, horsemen, and with many ships enter into the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through, and enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, the prominent people of Ammon, to be sure the area called Jordan today. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and north shall trouble him, probably the areas of Russia and China. Therefore he will go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. And there won't be anybody to help him at that time. The United States certainly will not be in a shape to help him. So the king of the south is going to come against this king of the north that we think, we believe, and we've taught for many years is a group of 10 nations in Europe led by a charismatic and powerful leader. The king of the south will come against him, and this king of the north will just destroy him in a very quick and all-out war. So that calls for a great military presence in Europe. And so let me get to Europe right now. Well, let's wait just a minute. There are two possible reasons for, at least, for the king of the south moving against the king of the north. One is, like I've mentioned, the Islamic people do not favor the Catholic Church. And Europe is, or will be, under the control of, or to a great extent, under the control of the Catholic Church and the Pope. Certainly under the influence of that. And that will cause a great deal of concern for the Islamic people. They may want to move against the Christians and think that they can overtake Europe. They have tried to do that in the past unsuccessfully, but they did get as far as Paris, I believe. I think there are some good articles in the latest Good News. I don't know if you've received that already. We got ours yesterday, I believe, and good articles about the Middle East there, and especially about Islam. Pretty strong articles, really. Very good, very interesting reading. Anyway, that has been a problem in the past, and I'm sure that the Catholic Church and the Pope are not unaware of that. Just this past, 2 years ago in 2012, after a Islamic coup, as many as 200,000 Christians fled the country of Mali in Africa. It's basically now an Islamist country. And the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom here in the United States recently said the flight of Christians out of the region, he's talking about the Middle East mainly, is unprecedented, and it's increasing year by year. In our lifetime alone, Christians might disappear altogether from Iraq, Afghanistan, and Egypt. And I think that's probably pretty much true by now. Millions of Christians have fled the Middle East. And so that's something that we don't see on the news all the time, but it's something that is happening in the Islamic, especially the more radical Islamic groups, are persecuting and killing Christians pretty much whenever they come in contact with them. Something that we need to keep in mind. It's going to cause lots of problems somewhere down the road. I'm surprised it hasn't already. But I know the Catholic Church will not stand for that forever. And another thing that could cause a problem between the King of the South and the North is the energy needs of the Europe. Europe is very dependent on outside energy. And, of course, the area of the Middle East supplies a lot of oil to the world and to Europe in particular. It supplies about a third of Europe's needs in that area. Getting on to Europe, they right now have a European Union of 28 nations, 28 separate nations. The Bible talks about that coming down to 10, if you'll turn to Revelation 17, verse 12. It's talking about the beast power in Europe, and it says, "The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast." So they're going to be giving their power over to this beast power for a short period of time. I'm sure they'll be reluctant to give him their power and authority. They're going to have to demand something in return. And it may be that they feel that they have no other choice to guarantee the survival of Europe. Anyway, in verse 13, "These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. And these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them." So they're going to be in existence until the time of Jesus Christ returns. But right now, like I said, there are 28 nations in the European Union, and I guess the Bible talks about 10, so something's going to have to happen to bring that about. Perhaps there'll be a core of 10 nations, or perhaps the number of those nations will break away. I don't know. But right now, the European Union has the strongest economy in the world, stronger than the United States. Last year, their GDP was $16.6 trillion, compared to the United States at $16.2. Now, China is down the line a ways, and I know you've heard in the news, or perhaps you have, about China taking over first place from the United States as far as their economic strength. But that is adjusted for purchasing power. And what they're talking about is, for example, if some person in China goes into a store and buys a shirt, it's going to cost him a lot less than it would if he came to the United States and bought that same shirt, see, adjusted for purchasing power. If you do that, then the Chinese economy is greater than ours. But otherwise, it's not. It's still lagging behind. But the European economy is the strongest in the world. Yeah, but their spending on military is quite a bit behind us. We spend about $640 billion, well, we did last year, on military. We've spent more than that in the past, upwards of $1 trillion, I think, in Iraq and Afghanistan. But we're on track to spend $640 billion this year. And we probably won't be able to sustain that very far into the future. That's going to have to be cut back, and the European Union is going to have to take their share of defense spending. You know, for many years since World War II, the United States has supplied much of the defense for most of the free world, really. And Europe has been dependent upon that. And as a result, they've been able to build a very strong economy. If you don't have to spend much on defense, you can spend a lot on other things, you know. And so that's what they've done. But our spending in this country is going to have to be cut back, our military spending. I'm sure that I think the Obama government has tried to do that, cut back a certain amount, and regardless of who becomes president, it's probably going to have to be cut back some more. We just can't sustain that indefinitely. But Europe will have to take a bigger role in there in their military spending. And certain things are going to cause them to want to do that. One of the things that might cause them to do that is the problems with religion, with the Islamic people killing Christians and coming into Europe in pretty large numbers. You know, there's some pretty large Islamic communities in France and Italy, other places, in Germany. And they're not going to stand for the Islamic people taking over, I don't believe. So that's one of the things to look for is the buildup of military strength of Europe. Europe also has a very big weakness, and that's that they are a very large energy importer, unlike the United States. Europe gets a third of its oil and gas from OPEC and a third from Russia, two sources that are a little bit shaky, you might say, or perhaps two sources that might use that weakness of Europe to gain advantage. And so that's another thing to watch out for. The Catholic Church has ties with Europe, with the European Union. They have for a long time, going back to Nazi Germany and before. A German Jew by the name of Gunther Levy wrote a book called The Catholic Church in Nazi Germany, in which he stated, one is inclined to conclude that the Pope and his advisors, influenced by the long tradition of moderate anti-Semitism, so widely accepted in Vatican circles, means they never have liked the Jews, did not view the plight of the Jews with a real sense of urgency and moral outrage. No, he didn't. And the Catholic Church kind of turned a blind eye to a lot of the things that the Nazis were doing to the Jews. After all, many Catholics consider the Jews to be Christ killers. And the Catholic historian Alan Finister said, the original idea of the European Union has deep roots in Catholic social teaching. So it's a union that is going to grow closer and closer together, the Catholic Church and the European Union. It's a relationship. Turn to Revelation 13, if you will. Revelation 13. In verse 11, Revelation 13, verse 11. Revelation 13, verse 11. Says, I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. We believe this is talking about the false prophet or the Catholic Church leader. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. And so there's going to come a time when the Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church, is going to have the ability to perform great signs like that, which are going to influence very large number of Catholics and probably other Protestants, Christians, to believe that he is really the sent from God, or maybe even is God, and they'll follow the European Union too. They'll want to be a part of that. So those things are some of the things to look out for. We also need to watch the things that are happening in the United States, I think, are even more disturbing or depressing. As I saw in the newspaper today, that the stock market is continuing to do well. It hit a record high this past week of 18,000, which is nobody, I guess, expected it would reach quite that well, quite so soon. And for those of you who've been around for a while, if you remember when the stock market crashed, or maybe nobody here does, the stock market before that was a record high too. So it doesn't guarantee that it's going to stay high. We do have a very large debt, $18 trillion. We hit that this year. And we only generate about $16 trillion of produced goods a year, gross national product, or GDP, gross domestic product. Our debt continues to increase with no end in sight. That's the scary part about it, and I guess the most worrisome part. Doesn't seem like anybody wants to do anything about it or can do much about it. And so it's continuing to grow. Federal Reserve are keeping interest rates artificially low. It's around 0%. And can't do that forever. You know, it has to go up. Interest rates will eventually go up, and that will change the economy for the worse, I think. Some other countries with debt exceeding their GDP are Greece, Italy, Portugal, Ireland, and all of which are considered very weak economies. And then Japan, too. Japan has a very high debt. So we'll see what happens in Japan in the next few months, I guess. The United States owes most of its debt to the public. A lot of people buy securities, government securities, and so forth. And so over $12 trillion is owed to the public. Some of it's held by the government, other government agencies. A little over $1 trillion is held by China, and a little over $1 trillion to Japan. And I'm sure that they want to be repaid. Biggest expenses that we have in our budget, four different items. Interest on the national debt is one of them, $450 billion a year. National defense, $650 billion a year. And then various social programs, $900 billion, almost $1 trillion, and then almost $1 trillion for Social Security. So those are things that we should have done something about already, but it's getting kind of late to try to do something about that. One of the problems with our social programs is we have a big unfunded obligation. That means we haven't paid for it yet. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, talking about over $45 trillion that we haven't funded yet. So if you add that to the federal debt, you're talking about around $60 trillion, you know, which is something that we certainly couldn't resolve. So something bad is happening and is going to come before too long, you know. It's going to get worse when the baby boomers, all of them retire, and I'm one of them. I've been retired for a few years. There are a number of others that are getting very close to retirement. When they do, that's going to affect that quite a bit. And, of course, we're letting a lot of people into the country who did not pay into Social Security or any of these programs or pay taxes and so forth, and they're getting drawing out of that, too. So that causes some additional problems, and I don't think anybody's going to do much about that either. So we're headed the wrong direction, and it's just a matter of time until we really have a major problem. What does the Bible say about some of these things? Turn to Proverbs 22. Here's a real basic precept. Proverbs 22. Solomon wrote this. He was a wise man. He didn't always do wise things, but at least he knew what to do. Proverbs 22, verse 7. Proverbs 22, verse 7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing for the borrower to be servant to the lender. If you have a, you know, need to move into a house, you're probably going to have to take out a loan. And if you have a business, need to expand it or something like that, need to buy some new equipment for a while, it's okay if you're going to take out a loan. But if you have to borrow money to pay for basic necessities like food, you know, you have a little problem. And that's kind of the position that the United States is getting into. When it says the rich rules over the poor, reminds me of a statement that a lady gave to me a few years ago. We were talking about the golden rule, you know. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And she said, the real golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules. And that's largely true, too, you know. Of course, I know that God's laws still exist, but a lot of the laws that we have in the country, especially financial laws and tax laws and so forth, were made by rich people. You know, they have lobbyists and so forth that affect the tax rules and so forth. And the rich do rule over the poor, too. You go out and try to get a job, you have to get one from somebody who has more money than you, right? Hopefully. That's one of the things. Now, let's see. Another one is, I need to watch where I am here. Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy and 28 and Leviticus 26 are national blessings and curses. It's not a bad idea once in a while to read these to see where we are in prophecy, give you an idea and see how things are going and see what it says here in the Bible. Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 1 and 2, it says, "It shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and these blessings will come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God." So God says, well, if you try hard to obey me and so forth, then I'll bless you in various ways. And one of those ways we can see in verse 12. "The Lord will open to you his good treasure, the heavens, to give the rain to your land in its season, to bless all the work of your hand. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow." So God seemed to think that was a good thing, to be able to lend to nations rather than to have to borrow. "The Lord will make you the head and not the tail. You shall be above only and not beneath, if you heed the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today and are careful to observe them." So God's saying that we would be a very strong nation, be a leader nation and so forth, and would not be borrowing from anybody if we were doing what was right. On the other hand, Deuteronomy 28, verse 15, "It shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and statutes, when I command you today, that these curses will come upon you and overtake you." Now, it doesn't necessarily mean God is going to intervene and curse you. It just means that bad things will happen, you know, if you don't obey God. It's kind of a natural course of events. Deuteronomy 28, verse 43. Verse 43. "The alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower." Is that happening? You know, stop and think about that. I think it is. Verse 44, "He shall lend to you. You shall not lend to him." Who is it that we're borrowing from? China and Japan, some other nations too. We're borrowing from them and we're not lending to them. And I think they're getting a little nervous about loaning us $1 trillion apiece. Maybe they want some collateral. I've heard that the Chinese own sections of land in the country. I don't know. But anyway, that is happening to us right now. And some disturbing trends that I saw in just looking up things on the internet. Trends about abortion and homosexuality and God's laws. And I thought that would be kind of interesting to go through them, starting back in 1973, which seems like a long time ago. Wasn't that long for me, but it seems like a long time ago. 1973 was kind of an important year in two respects. That was the year that Roe versus Wade took place, and the Supreme Court decided that a woman had a right to abortion, no matter what, you know. And so abortion clinics were set up, and abortions were started to be legalized, you know, even encouraged in some cases. Since that time, we've had 56 million abortions, so it's been quite a bit, you know, fairly large city. That same year, the American Psychiatric Association, in something that was a little known, I guess, at the time, removed homosexuality from the list of mental disorders. And so it was an official change in thinking at that time, no longer considered it a mental disorder. Turn to 1 Corinthians 6, if you will. 1 Corinthians 6. First Corinthians 6 and verse 9, Paul was talking to the church there about immorality, various types of it. And he said in verse 9, chapter 6, "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators or idolaters or adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor sodomites, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners will inherit the kingdom of God." And then he goes on to say, "And such were some of you, but you were washed, sanctified, justified in the name of the Lord Jesus and by the Spirit of our God." So they had been, some of them had been homosexuals, but they changed. They did change. It's possible to change. Just don't have to be born that way, right? I mean, some people say, "Well, that's the way I was born and I can't change." But that's not what the Bible says. So they can change. In 1993, which was 20 years later, the military instituted what they called a "don't ask, don't tell" policy, which means if you were homosexual, don't tell, and they wouldn't ask. Now, when I was in the military, I was drafted in 66, I guess. And I wasn't in the church then until 68. For 2 years, in the band even, which is a little bit, you know, I think that some of the guys in the band may be a little strange, but just kidding. But I wasn't one of them, you know. But at any rate, the military did not tolerate homosexuality at that time. Certainly not. Now they do. In 2003, which is 3 years later, Judge Roy Moore was removed from the Alabama Supreme Court. I think some of you remember that, for refusing to remove the Ten Commandments monument from the state Supreme Court building. So he refused to move the Ten Commandments, and they removed him. And that says something about our country right there. 2008, new visitor center in the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., and inscribed on one wall of it says, "We have built no temple but the Capitol. We consult no common oracle," in other words, God, "but the Constitution." So that's a dangerous thing to say, to inscribe in concrete, I would think. But they did it. 2013, our friends to the north, Canada, their Supreme Court calls biblical language, written or spoken, against homosexuality, hate crime. That was in 2013. So if you say words like abomination or refer to Sodom and Gomorrah in relation to homosexuals, that's considered a hate crime in Canada. And in 2014, which is 1 year later, our U.S. Supreme Court overturned the state bans on same-sex marriage, ones like they had here in Arkansas. And today, now, in the United States, 53% of Americans agree with same-sex marriage, think it's okay. But it was only 32% back in 2003. Probably before that, it was much less. I know when I was growing up, it was probably close to zero. So things are speeding up. Statistics in 2013, half the women aged 15 to 44 are living together with a mate as opposed to being married. And as a result, 50% of children born outside of marriage. 50%. And 1 in 4 children under the age of 18 is being raised without a father. And nearly 45% of them live below the poverty line. And that's one of the reasons why we're having problems with young men and the police. You know, they haven't been taught right, they haven't been taught respect, haven't been set a good example. Many Protestant preachers teach that we're no longer under the law. Well, Jesus fulfilled that. We don't have to do that. You don't have to keep those commandments. We couldn't do it anyway. Jesus kept them for us. Turn to Isaiah 5, if you will. Isaiah 5. Let's see what Isaiah says about that. Isaiah 5 and verse 20. Says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. And that's what we're doing here in this country right now with homosexuality and abortion and a lot of other things. Who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. We have a lot of that in the country too. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 1, since we're here in Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 1. Starting in verse 3. The ox knows its owner, and the donkey its master's crib. But Israel does not know. My people do not consider. They don't know who their God is. That's one of the problems in this country. We don't know God. Alas, a sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a brood of evildoers, children who are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked to anger the Holy One of Israel. They have turned away backward. Why should you be stricken again? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. The whole heart faints from the sole of the foot even to the head. That's the leaders, you know. And we don't have good leaders today. There is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed or bound up or soothed with ointment. Nobody's telling the leaders and the people that they're doing is wrong. I guess if you are, we're trying to do that. If you read the last good news, you could see that that's an excellent publication. Well, what can we do? What can you and I do? Talking about coping with the news. Not talking about changing the news. We can't change it, but we can cope with it. Proverbs 3. It's a good foundational principle in Proverbs here. Proverbs 3 in verse 5. Proverbs 3 in verse 5. Proverbs 3 and verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. See, we trust in God, not in our military or our federal government, or our neighbors or whoever, not in ourselves either. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. So that's what we're looking for, somebody to direct our paths, right? To show us the right way to go, know what to do in difficult times. And if we trust in God, he will do that. Turn to Ezekiel, if you will, book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 9. Ezekiel chapter 9, verse 3. Ezekiel was written mostly for modern Israel, mostly for the end time. If you read the first verse in the first chapter of Ezekiel, you find out that Ezekiel himself was in among the Jewish captives in Babylon when he wrote this. And many years before that, the northern tribes of Israel had been taken captive, so he couldn't have been writing to them. They were in captivity, and many of the Jews were in captivity. There were few people left in Jerusalem, but they would soon be taken into captivity. And so most of the book of Ezekiel is for us today, modern Israel. He had a vision here in chapter 9. About the throne of God. And in verse 3, it says, Now the glory of the God of Israel had gone up from the cherub where it had been to the threshold of the temple. And he called to the man clothed with white linen who had the writer's inkhorn at his side. And the Lord said to him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over the abominations that are done within it. And these were saved. And to the others, he said in my hearing, go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eye spare or have any pity. But he did spare those who sighed and cried for the abominations of the country, for the city. So God wants us to do that too. He wants us to take a look and see what's going on in our world and especially our nation, you know, and to pray for them and to care about it and to take it to heart, make sure we don't get caught up in it. Sigh and cry for it. You know, it's easy to get angry about it and throw a brick through your television or something, but it's not, you know, it's not going to do you any good. It's not going to do anybody else any good either. Your wife might not like it either. All right. Turn to Daniel 12. No, I haven't thrown a brick. I just threatened to. Daniel 12, verse 1. We read in Daniel 11. But this is the same time that he's talking about, the end time. And he says, At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. He's talking about the great tribulation, time that we don't want. We do not look forward to that for anybody, not for our children, not for our neighbors and our nation or anything, even our enemies. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. So if we have a close relationship to God, we're sighing and crying over all the abominations. We know what's going on and don't have a part in it. We're praying about it, asking God to have mercy on us and on the land. Well, he'll spare us. Matthew 24, we were there once. This is another place where Christ gives us some good advice. Matthew 24 and verse 13. Talking about many troubles, the beginning of sorrows in verse 8. People being delivered to tribulation and many offended, many false prophets. We see many false prophets in the world today. Lawlessness will abound, and that is happening, isn't it? And I think these incidents with the police lately is going to cause that to really increase. Lawlessness. It's just my opinion. But it says in verse 13, and the point I wanted to make, he who endures to the end shall be saved. It's in a matter of endurance, isn't it? It's not a matter of a short race. It's an endurance. So we have to endure to the end, and we'll be saved, it says. Luke 21, the last scripture, Luke 21. Luke 21, verse 36. This is the parallel to the first scripture that I mentioned in Matthew 24. Not the most recent one, but the first one about watching and praying. Luke 21, verse 36. It's talking about Christ's return. It's going to come on the world as a snare. And he says, watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things. You know, there are some people who are going to be counted worthy to escape. We just got through reading about that, Proverbs and Ezekiel and Daniel and so forth. God's people who are close to him are going to be counted worthy to escape. So he says, watch and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. So we need to watch world events, not get too angry about it. I know that we can't, there's not much we can do about it, but to let it affect us and to make us even more aware that we need to be close to God in these difficult times, and some difficult times coming ahead, a lot more than there are right now. Trust in God. Sigh and cry over the abominations that we see. Pray about it. Endure, persevere. Endure to the end. And watch and pray always. We do these things and stay close to God. He promises to spare us from the worst of the difficult times that are coming.